Do you sometimes end up feeling pushed around by other people and even by your own brain when it comes time to make a decision? For so many highly sensitive persons, high-stakes choices can feel like we're navigating a minefield while wearing a blindfold. So in this episode, my analytically minded son, Jonathan, reveals how external pressures can sway us during important decisions. And then I'll share strategies to calm the inner turmoil so you can move forward with clarity and confidence. You'll walk away with practical tools to recognize unhealthy pressure, to protect your peace, and to stand your ground with others and with yourself. Welcome to Grit and Grace, the podcast for highly sensitive Christian women. I'm your host, Sherry Gregory. Are you tired of the overthinking, overwhelm, and exhaustion that can come with being a highly sensitive person? Are you ready to stop worrying that there's something wrong with you and start understanding and nurturing yourself as an HSP? Together, we'll build resilience, practice self-compassion, set healthy boundaries, unlock your creativity, and learn to embrace, not fight, your God-given sensitivity. Let's dig in. Hey friend, I'm so glad you could join me again today. We're going to look at two ways you need to stand your ground as a highly sensitive person when it comes to decision making. And I'll tell you them right off the top. You need to stand your ground with other people, and you need to stand your ground with yourself. Now, before we dive all the way into today's topic, I do want to invite you to a very special place where highly sensitive Christian women like you and me can learn to trust our God-given sensitivity and make confident decisions without second-guessing ourselves all the time. The Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe isn't just another online group. It's a safe, supportive space where you find tools, encouragement, and friendships with sisters in Christ who truly understand your unique journey. To learn more, you can visit sherrygregory.com/cafe or click the link in today's show notes. So I ended episode 290 with a bit of a cliffhanger. 10 short minutes after thinking I had made the decision to purchase car B, I received an email from dealership B that caused me to change my mind. And I said, well, you'll hear that story complete with a cameo appearance from my son Jonathan in the next episode. And this is that episode. So here we go. Now, when I was test driving cars, my adult son Jonathan came on each of the dealership visits with me. Not because I needed a bodyguard, but because I needed a boundary guard. As is true for many highly sensitive persons, the quote-unquote dark side of my empathy is a tendency toward people-pleasing, taking responsibility for other people's happiness, and doing whatever I can to guarantee that they feel good in the moment, none of which is at all helpful when I need to make a high-stakes decision on a tight deadline. So after Jonathan and I had visited dealership B and dealership C, I sent almost identical emails to both of them. Here's the gist of the email I sent to dealership B. Hi, Tom. And just so you know, his name really wasn't Tom. Thank you for your time yesterday assisting me with test driving. And then I listed the specific model of vehicle I test drove. My husband and I have full approval for an auto loan through USAA. And dealership C is currently offering a specific interest rate. And then I told what that was for up to 60 months. Are you, dealership B, offering any special finance offers for the model that I test drove yesterday? Take care, Sherry Gregory. And I received this response.
Tom wanted me to reach out and share with you the current incentives available on the specific car you're interested in. This car is quickly becoming the flagship vehicle for our brand and needs little or no incentives from the factory to be a drive-away favorite. Where the car might lack in competitive rates, it surely makes up for in style and grace. I hope you were able to experience that on the drive yesterday with Tom. Please let me know if you have any questions.
And here is Jonathan's breakdown.
Now let's break it down.
Tom wanted me to reach out and share with you.
To my mind, the intro does two things. First, it establishes your prior relationship with Tom. Second, it distances the writer from Tom. My feel here is that the goal here is to simultaneously lean on rapport and shield Tom from any negative consequence of this email interaction should any arise.
The current incent is available on the specific car you're interested in.
Straightforward, sort of. It is the current incentive. But baked into that statement is the fear/concern that the current incentive might change. This will be reinforced in the next sentence.
This car is quickly becoming the flagship vehicle for our brand.
This reinforces key values of this car manufacturer, aka resale value, reliability, while giving you the opportunity to get in on the ground floor of things. How generous.
It needs little or no incentives from the factory to be a drive-away favorite.
Spectacular. Anchors expectations and creates a feel of demand/FOMO. That said, I feel like there might be some opportunity for turnabout here. If there's little need for anything else from the factory, then why the heck would they try to upsell you on them?
Where the car might lack in competitive rates, it surely makes up for in style and grace.
Once again, reinforcing the expectation of higher out-of-pocket/dealership negotiated costs while possibly reminding you of what you enjoyed about the vehicle, i.e. the color, the overall looks, etc. As a personal note, this seems a bit odd that they started with where instead of what, but maybe because it feels less capitulatory, i.e. what it lacks versus where it lacks first feels a little bit worse.
I hope you were able to experience that on the drive yesterday with Tom.
Another reminder of your salesperson, more accurately, the salesperson assigned to you, and a gentle way to have you relive your earlier drive, aka you already spent time with it, why not spend more time with it? Permanently.
Please let me know if you have any questions.
Standard sign-off, not much to add here.
So then I sent this reply to Dealership B. Good evening. Thank you so much for the information that you included in your email. I now have two questions. As I said before, my husband and I have approval for an auto loan through USAA. I see that your company is currently offering such and such interest for so and so months on the model I test drove. What would be our next step to see if we qualify for this financing offer? Number two, I've attached a PDF of the Consumer Reports pricing for the car that I test drove. Can you let me know if this represents an accurate breakdown of our out-the-door cost? Take care, Sherry Gregory. And this is the response I received from Dealership B.
Good morning, Sherry. As long as your credit score is above 660, you qualify for those rates from our financing company. The pricing from Consumer Reports is very aggressive and does not reflect what our dealership is willing to sell the car for. Most of our dealerships in California have pre-installed equipment on new cars. With that being said, as a consumer, advised from a consumer advocate source, the idea is to achieve the best price naturally. The dealership obviously takes the standpoint of making the most money possible. If you're willing to remain flexible, the dealer is willing to concede a certain amount of desired profit to arrive at a deal. I see that you live locally, and our desire to keep business local is of the utmost importance. Do you have time to swing by and discuss pricing? I'm asking for 20 minutes of your time in order to arrive at an agreement. I look forward to the opportunity to earn your business, and I wanted to let you know that the car you mentioned is here and ready to take home.
Brief thoughts, this email was more rushed in its creation and it suffers for it. Now for the breakdown.
Good morning, Sherry. As long as your credit score is above 660, you qualify for those rates from our financing company.
Strong start. Answered your first question with no fluff. Pretty much perfect response.
The pricing from Consumer Reports is very aggressive.
Immediately does several things. First, calls the authority you're using into doubt. Second, calls the authority biased against them, which in turn makes it easier for their side of the dispute to be taken reasonably. And third, sets the expectation that the fair/honest answer lies somewhere in the middle, leaving them with lots of potential wiggle room for what exactly constitutes fair.
And does not reflect what our dealership is willing to sell the car for.
This actually might be a good bit. If it's true, then they've set a clear boundary, which makes further negotiations on this point straightforward and clear. That said, it could also be their way to dissuade you from looking for a better deal from them.
Most of our dealerships in California have pre-installed equipment on new cars.
Am I missing something from their emails? Because otherwise this came out of the blue, which is hilarious to me. It doesn't sate any of your questions. At best, it gives you a point of further negotiation. i.e. those aren't features we want/we're looking for, and at worst this is an admission that their prices are increased because they added things neither looked for nor wanted.
With that being said, as a consumer, advised from a consumer advocate source. The idea is to achieve the best price naturally.
If I'm reading this correctly, I think they're trying to state your position or stance, but then shifting your paradigm to fit their own. The outside sources you have aren't there to tell you the truth of things, but only to give you a vague idea of what to expect. Another note. What is the natural way to get the best price? Who the heck decides that? Why is this sentence here? The actual reason it's here, like the previous half sentence, is to reinforce the idea that the only true price metrics are the ones they value, that they state. It devalues your info while propping up their perspective.
The dealership obviously takes the standpoint of making the most money possible.
This is true, but an odd thing to bring up. I guess it's here to make you understanding or something similar. There's basically no reason to bring this up other than to shift negotiations to a more confrontational nature.
If you're willing to remain flexible.
What a line! Amazing! Spectacular! This is the entire reason I wanted to go line by line in my response. What a telling statement. Alright, the actual breakdown. Not like it's needed, but for completeness' sake. This puts the onus of anything going wrong during negotiations on you, while also claiming the moral high ground of fairness and flexibility without having to demonstrate either.
The dealer is willing to concede a certain amount of desired profit to arrive at a deal.
Another somewhat odd line, though, it does almost make the previous sentence's inclusion reasonable. Frankly, neither should be here from a negotiating lens, but still. Here's the breakdown. It demonstrates their willingness to be generous while also reinforcing their hard limit expectations to allow the poor downtrodden dealership to make enough coins for this evening's supper.
I see that you live locally, and our desire to keep business local is of the utmost importance.
Honestly, this isn't too bad of a line in a vacuum. It makes a safe bet that local equals better in your book, so it builds a shared value system. It also primes you to be willing to make a short trip, as it were.
Do you have time to swing by and discuss pricing?
Immediately tries to have you invest more time and effort to come over, on their turf, on their terms.
I'm asking for 20 minutes of your time in order to arrive at an agreement.
I'm reasonably certain that this was the crux of their entire email. They wanted to have you be right there, right now, to finalize some agreement, since it seems like you'd be willing to do so. You'd request more information, and they hope to get a sale in.
I look forward to the opportunity to earn your business.
Frames the whole conversation as an earnest person working hard to earn their pay, while also being someone who's willing to put in the work on your behalf. As a personal note, based off the emails we just dissected, I have some doubts.
And I wanted to let you know that the car you mentioned is here and ready to take home.
Shows that they have what you're looking for and plays into the whole it'll be real quick premise. As a summary, their emails were both designed to have you give up your negotiating power while handing them leverage. While some courtesy and professionalism was extended, far less than I'd want in a business relationship was given.
Now, I gave myself a full day before responding to Dealership B. Here's my response to their "you're being aggressive and you should be more flexible" email. Yesterday morning, I had breakfast in Scotts Valley with my dear friend Kathy, and I told her all about the excellent experience I had with Tom and the car I test drove last week. As I described Tom's intentionality, engagement, expertise, and attention to detail, along with everything I loved about the car, Kathy said, "So obviously, you're going to get that car, right?" I paused and agreed and told her I was going to stop by your dealership, Dealership B, on my way home to get the paperwork rolling. And then, 10 minutes later, I received your email. I will limit my response to 2 points. Number one, you said,
"The pricing from Consumer Reports is very aggressive and does not reflect what our dealership is willing to sell the car for."
The pricing from Consumer Reports came to me via an email on February 18, 2025, with the subject line, "Your offer from our dealership." See the screenshots attached. But on your February 22nd email, you distanced yourself from the very pricing that was sent to me by you or on your behalf. Is this an accurate interpretation of the situation? Number two. You said,
"I look forward to the opportunity to earn your business, and I wanted to let you know that the car you mentioned is here and ready to take home."
The way to earn my business is to honor the Consumer Reports pricing that came to me via the February 18th, 2025 email with the subject line, "Your offer from our dealership." When I asked Dealership C the same question I asked you about the Consumer Reports pricing, "Can you let me know if this represents an accurate breakdown of our out-the-door cost?" Their response was a simple one-word yes. Sincerely, Sherry Gregory. I hit send on that email to dealership B, and then Jonathan and I headed to dealership C so I could take another test drive. By the time we arrived at dealership C, a brand new email had arrived from dealership B.
I apologize for not fully understanding the scope of the email. I saw the price quote and the info from Consumer Reports and did not realize that the quote came from us. For that, I apologize, and if the car is in stock, I'm willing to do that price. Most of our business is conducted in person, as things tend to get misconstrued via email, no matter how descriptive and articulate. If you're comfortable with a phone call, I am more than happy to assure you that I am prepared to offer you a professional and streamlined buying experience.
This is the email I was referring to in episode 288, Why Asking for What You Want and Actually Getting It Feels So Wrong. Now, at the time, I felt like it was a solid apology. But in hindsight, one line really bothers me. It's the line that says,
"Most of our business is conducted in person, as things tend to get misconstrued via email, no matter how descriptive and articulate."
This is what's called a logical fallacy, a tactic that is often used in debate and persuasion. It pits in-person communication against email communication, setting up a false dichotomy and implying that although emails tend to get misconstrued, in-person conversations do not tend to get misconstrued. But you and I know that all forms of human communication are prone to misunderstanding and misinterpretation, right? The truth here is that dealership B preferred in-person communication because it gave them the advantage, while I preferred email because I felt like it kept them from taking advantage of me. And as someone who has been involved with virtual community building for more than 30 years, I used to monitor discussion boards for America Online. That's how far back I go. I know that it's entirely possible to use online tools, such as email, to serve customers with professionalism and excellence, especially if you're a customer who needs to take your time, as we discussed in episode 289, and you need to be able to change your mind, which we discussed in episode 290. Now, I am not implying that every highly sensitive person will automatically prefer using email. That is not my point. I am saying that email communication can give you the time and space and documentation, ding, 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 for the decision-making process you need. Especially, and we will be talking so much more about this in the next episode, when you're already feeling vulnerable. I did not realize exactly how vulnerable I was feeling until the whole process was over. And I realized once again, I had to make a huge decision in the midst of a crisis. And it made me wonder what percentage of car buyers are in an emergency situation that needs to be resolved a lot sooner rather than later. And without wanting to sound cynical, I realize that the whole process is likely designed to take advantage of a person who is already in a vulnerable spot, which means it is vital that you use your resources to help you stand your ground with other people. And you'll also need to stand your ground with yourself. Stand your ground with yourself means settling in to your decision once it's made. Stand your ground with yourself means having compassion for and a sense of humor about the residual decision-making stuff that your brain keeps spitting out. Now, I know that in episode 290, Change Your Mind, I encourage you to try on all the options. But once you've made an irreversible decision, it's time to let all those other options go, which can be far easier said than done when your brain is wired for deep processing and noticing nuances. Now, we've all heard of FOMO, fear of missing out, but did you know there's such a thing as FOBO, which is the fear of a better option? Once you've made a big decision, your brain may still be experiencing option overload. It's kind of like you've built a house and it's done, but there's still a bunch of extra stuff sitting around the construction site and your brain is going, "We must not be done. We need to keep building." So in my case, I did end up purchasing car B. And the very next day, I found myself thinking about car C and I started to panic. What does this mean? Does this mean that I made a terrible mistake? So here's what I told myself. Sherry, the fact that you're still thinking about car C means that your brain hasn't quite realized that you're done, and it can stop working so hard. You know, if you found nails at your construction site, you wouldn't go, oh no, this nail should be in my house, and grab a hammer to pound it in. You would toss the nail into the dumpster. So be gentle with your brain as it settles down from decision-making mode. And stand your ground with yourself. In the weeks since bringing home my new car, Car B, I've needed to do this in one specific area, and you are welcome to laugh at me, because that area is the color. Now, I did buy an absolutely beautiful red car. It is metallic red. It is candy apple red. And not but, it is not quite the red that has been catching my eye for the last several years. That would have been Car C, but I bought Car B. So there's a part of me that whenever I see Car C's particular shade of red driving down the road, this part of me starts to yell, that's the most beautiful color in the world! Now, in the past, before I did a deep dive into understanding regret, I would have assumed that the pain I feel whenever I see a Car C red, I would have assumed it meant I had made the wrong decision. But now that I understand regret so much better, and also now that I understand internal family systems just enough to use it in my everyday life, I recognize that there's just a small part of me that thinks Car C's particular shade of red is the most beautiful color in the whole wide world. This part of me is kind of like a five-year-old with her favorite color of crayon and hair barrettes and shoes, and she is just precious. And you know what? She's right. It is the most beautiful color in the whole wide world. And you know what else? She is a part of me. She is not all of me. So I can agree with this little part of me that just loves Car C's particular shade of red while simultaneously remaining 100% grounded in the car choice I made, which was Car B. And I've named my new car Bella because she is so beautiful. I make up excuses to look out the window so I can see her in the driveway multiple times per day. Honoring the HSP decision-making rule, stand your ground, protects me from my old habits of rumination, self-recrimination, and counterfactual thinking, and allows me to experience the joy of looking at my new car and looking forward to driving her for years to come. Now, if learning to stand your ground during and after decision making feels like a daunting task, you are not alone. And you don't have to do it alone. Inside the Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe, you'll find a safe space to build the resilience, self-trust, and confidence you need with practical support from sister HSPs who truly get you. Learn more about the Sensitive and Strong Community Cafe by heading to sherrygregory.com/cafe or by clicking the link in the show notes. Thank you for listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast for highly sensitive Christian women. I hope this episode leaves you feeling encouraged and equipped to thrive and to stand your ground. Be sure to follow in your favorite podcast app and share this episode with a friend. Now, if you're brand new to the whole HSP concept, come take the Am I a Highly Sensitive Person quiz. You'll find that link in the show notes. And remember, God created you sensitive. In Christ, you are always strong.